சமாதாங்கு சூத்தர் தி ஃபேக்டர்ஸ் ஆஃப் கன்சன்ட்ரேஷன் திஸ் டிஸ்கோர்ஸ் அப்பியர் இன் அங்குத்தர நிகாயம் திஸ் புக் ஆஃப் வாய்ஸ் ஐ ஹாவ் ஹர்ட் தட் ஆன் ஒன் ஒகேஷன் தி பிளெஸட் ஒன் ஹூ ஸ்டேயிங் அட் சாவத்தி இன் ஜேதஸ் குரூப் அநாத்வீண்டிகஸ் மோனஸ்ட்ரி தேர் ஹி அட்ரஸ் த மங்க்ஸ் மங்க்ஸ் ஐ வில் டீச் யூ தி ஃபைவ் ஃபேக்டர் நோபல் ரைட் கன்சன்ட்ரேஷன் லிசன் அண்ட் பே க்ளோஸ் அட்டென்ஷன் ஐ வில் ஸ்பீக் As you say, Lord, the monks replied. The Blessed One said, Now what monk is five-factor noble right concentration? There is the case where a monk, quiet, withdrawn from sensuality, withdrawn from unskilled qualities, enters and remains in the first jhana. Rapture and pleasure born from withdrawal, accompanied by direct thought and evaluation, he permeates and pervades, suffuses, and fills this very body with the rapture and pleasure born from withdrawal. There is nothing of his entire body unpervaded by rapture and pleasure born from withdrawal. Just as if a skilled bathman or Brahman's apprentice would pour bath powder into a brass basin and knead it together, sprinkling it again and again with water, so that his bowl of bath powder, saturated, moisture-laden, permeated within and without, would nevertheless not drip. Even so, the monks permeate, suffuses and fills this very body with the rapture and pleasure born of withdrawal. There is nothing of his entire body unpervaded by rapture and pleasure born from withdrawal. This is the first development of the five factors noble right concentration. So, here Buddha first talk about the first jhana concentration. So, there are these words that the idabhikkave bhikkhu vivicheva kamehi vivicchakusalehi dhammehi savitakkam savitaram vivekajam preetisukam pratamajjanam upasampaccha viharati. So there are these they withdrawn from sensuality, and so there is this vitakka vichara, savitakkam savitaram. What are these vitakka vichara? And it's explained in Petakopadesa, that vitakka, the thinking, there are these three kinds of thinking, namely the renunciation thinking, non-ill will thinking, and non-cruelty thinking. Those are the thinking that we ought to have in the meditation. So, withdrawn from sensuality, so karma, getting rid of those things, so renunciation is that thought of renunciation of sense pleasures, thought of non-ill will, that is that sort of maintaining the loving kindness instead of the ill will. And instead of the cruelty thinking, one would sort of maintain compassion. So those are the three things. This won't just come as on its own, that we need to sort of meditate on a sort of a subject. Like one might be contemplating about suffering, that for example, noble truths, that birth is suffering, aging is suffering, sickness is suffering, death is suffering, and so on. And then he would examine, why would I get this suffering? And then he would sort of see, this suffering is because of my craving. So sensual pleasures are the cause for this suffering. So then he would get the thinking that it would be better for me to get rid of this sensual pleasures, so thought of renunciation of sense pleasures. Or else one would meditate, selecting a subject like 32 parts of the body, or dead body, or four great elements. And one would keep on focusing on, you know, if you take 32 parts of the body, then you look at the foul nature of the body. So since when you examine that foul nature of the body, then whatever the sensual desires, because of that one will cease. So that's how one would sort of arriving at this the first jhana. And this Petakopadesa explain further. So vitakka is that thinking, these three kind of thinking, renunciation thinking, non-willy thinking, and non-cruelty thinking. And vichara being is the first, thinking is the first instance, while the exploring is the exploration of what is got thus. So you apply and then explore it. So an example is, just as when a man sees a man coming in the distance, he does not yet know whether it is a woman or a man, but when he has got the perception that it is a woman or that it is a man, or that it is one of such color, caste, or that it is one of such shape, figure, then when he is thinking this, he further scrutinizes as follows. How then? Is he virtuous or unvirtuous? Rich or poor? Such is exploring. So the first would see someone far away and then try to determine that is, you know, that the man or woman, and then close by and then having determined that is a man or a woman, and then he is thinking about the other parts, you know, that whether this is a rich person or poor person and so on. So with that exploring, that these are the sensual sort of thing when you actually do it that way. So the example is that the fixing the mind, initial application, and the sustained application about the same object. So if you have the renunciation thinking and maintain like that, so first apply to it, and renunciation would be better for me, and keep on applying it. And if you do that, then this thinking is the opposite of perception of sensual pleasures. The first one is actually applying about sensual pleasures. The other one is the renunciation of this particular thing is the one actually creating a problem for me, and I would get rid of this one. So he'll keep on thinking to get rid of it. And it's the exploring is the opposite of the perception of ill will, rather than the anger thought, that the non-ill will. And of perception of cruelty. So is that's the opposite of the perception of cruelty. And it tells more examples over here. And so you can see that the first jhana is that there is this two components, initial application and sustained application, with akka vichara. Now, here you can see the example Buddha gave, just as if a skilled bathman or bathman's apprentices would pour bath powder, and he actually keep on mixing it. Keep on mixing it so that you get the form sort of made that one. So like you can see this initial application and sustained application, he has to keep on doing it to arrive at the first jhana, and the maintaining the first jhana is like that. Furthermore, with the stilling of direct thought and evaluation, he enters and remains in the second jhana. Rapture and pressure born of composer, unification of awareness free from direct thought and evaluation, internal assurance. He permeates and pervades, suffuses and fills this very body with the rapture and pressure born of composure. There is nothing of his entire body unpervaded by rapture and pleasure born of composer. So it's all over the body. The first one is starting from the head or somewhere. It's the whole body is touched by the first jhana. And similarly, it's touched by the second jhana. Over here, Buddha gave an example, just like a lake with a spring water welling up from within, having no inflows from east, west, north or south. And with the skies periodically supplying abundant showers, that means no rain either. And there aren't any way that water can get into this one. So the cool fount of water welling up from the within the lake, it is inside and it is coming, would permeates and pervades, suffuses and fill it with cool waters. There being no part of the lake unpervaded by the cool waters, even so the monk permeates and pervades, suffuses and fills this very body with the rapture and pressure born of composure. There is nothing of his entire body unpervaded by rapture and pressure born of composure. This is the second development of the five factors noble right concentration. So over here you can see that there is no vitakka vichara. The initial application and sustained application is not there. Why? Because having attained the first jhana concentration, he understands this initial application and sustained application are gross thing. It's not a, because it's starting from the head or somewhere, it is just flowing like a water flowing, and you have this rapturous feeling. It's a gross thing, you can see, feel from the body itself. So whatever thing feeling from the body, it's a gross thing. So this book again explained that With constant cultivation of this same thinking and exploring, his mentality become inclined thereto. So since he is keep on applying it, so mind tend to go in that direction. Then the thinking and exploring seem gross to him, and the renunciation born pleasure of happiness also is gross. That happiness is also gross. And he is fed up with this initial application and sustained application. That means to, in order to get something, one has to keep on applying something. If I have to do something all the time to get this one, it is gross. And the rapture that is born out of it also gross. And so the concentration born happiness and delight are born instead. This concentration born happiness comes in because of my initial application and sustained application I have done before. I prepared myself and maintained it. Now, like that the water thing over here, it says the fountain is coming from the well itself, not from the outside. So, because he got the concentration, so there is now concentration born, happiness and delight. And further, more, with the fading of rapture, he remains equanimous, mindful and alert, and sense pleasures with the body. He enters and remains in the third jhana, of which the normal ones declare, equanimous and mindful, he has pleasant abiding. He permeates and pervades, suffuses and fills this very body with the pleasure, divested of rapture, so that there is nothing of his entire body pervaded with pleasure, divested of rapture. Now in this instance, that he actually investigates the priti, that is this bodily pleasure that has arisen in the second jhana concentration, that one can cling to it. He is thinking that this is actually leading to the upadana clinging. So he would be, apply the equanimity, sampajana, he's got the wise attention to that one, but by doing this one, I am going in a path because it is suffering, the clinging is leading to the suffering, so I don't want the clinging. So I am trying to get rid of this suffering. Now try to arrive at that one. I got this second jhana and then rapture. And then rapture can lead to the clinging because that, you see, it's a bodily thing. So whenever there is this bodily thing, it can lead to a sort of a clinging. So now this book again explains that. The fading of happiness, what is comprised of by wetness, it says, but joy, cognizance still arises. There when we investigate that, he attains with only onlooking equanimity. So he applies the equanimity to that one. And he's aware. He has sort of awareness about the pleasure itself. So his mindfulness and awareness is both there, but it's not perfect at this stage. So that's the third jhana. Again, you can see that he permeates and pervades, suffuses and fills this very body with the pleasure. So the rapture is not there anymore, but there is pleasure. Pleasure is this mental pleasure. It's called sukha indriya. Just as a blue, white or red lotus pond, there may be some of the blue, white or red lotuses which, born and growing in the water, stay immersed in the water and flourish without standing up out of the water, so that they are permeated and pervaded, suffused and filled with cool water from their roots to their tips, and nothing of those blue, white or red lotuses would be unpervaded with cool water. Even so, the monk permeates and pervades, suffuses and fills this very body with the pleasure, divested of rapture. There is nothing of his entire body unpervaded pleasure, divested of rapture. This is the third development of the five factors, noble right concentration. So so here you can see this, the lotus flower, the petals, it touch the water, you know, so the all the time it get this thin water in that one, like that this pleasure is there, it's applying to the whole body. And furthermore, with the abandoning of pleasure and stress, as with earlier disappearance of elation and distress, he enters and remains in the fourth jhana, purity of equanimity and mindfulness. Neither pleasure nor pain, he sits, permeating the body with a pure bright awareness, so that there is nothing of his entire body pervaded by pure bright awareness. Now, in this case, this book explains that because of the priti and sukha, the rapture and the pleasure, somanasa and sukha, it can lead to asati. Asati is this lack of mindfulness, unmindfulness. If you think about this, you know, the if you think about suffering, birth is suffering, aging is suffering, and so on, you can see that you are actually mindful because you know that everything is, you know, of this nature, suffering nature. But when you have the pleasure, one would think that where is the suffering? So that the not unmindfulness can come. So, I mean, I haven't seen this explanation anywhere else, any of the other descriptions. And this one thoroughly explained this. So, what it says is in the first meditation, first jhana, the grief faculty, that is this the domanasa indriya, ceases because he is actually went to the pleasure state. And in the second meditation, the pain faculty ceases because that you can't get the bodily, you know, the rapture and then the thing, pleasure, if you have the grief. So you got the pleasure. So he is now going into the fourth jhana meditation. Here the only looking equanimity was not yet unclarified. It's not pure at this moment. That in the third jhana, because there was this pleasure, is not pure in that sense. Owing to the presence of the four faculties, namely the pain faculty, grief faculty, pleasure faculty, and joy faculty. Those four are there. Sukha, dukkha, domanasa, somanasa. With the cessation of these, there is only equanimity and awareness. Is aware now about all these things. Herein it was owing to the pleasure faculty and joy faculty that there was unmindfulness. Because whenever you have the pleasure, you have the unmindfulness. Because then you are not thinking that it is suffering. Because how come it is suffering? It is pleasurable. And with the when there is cessation, he becomes possessed of mindfulness. Then he gets the mindfulness when these things are not there. And it is owing to the pain faculty and the grief faculty that there was unawareness. If you have pain, then the awareness is not there. And with their cessation, he becomes aware. So with the clarification, due to onlooking equanimity, which is accompanied by neither painful nor pleasant feeling, he becomes mindful and aware. Both are there in the fourth jhana concentration. And there is unification of cognizance. This is called the fourth meditation. So it goes in step by step like that to the fourth jhana. And then Buddha gave an example, just as a man was sitting wrapped from head to foot with a white cloth so that there would be no part of his body to which the white cloth did not extend. Even so, the monk sits permeating his body with pure bright awareness. There is nothing of his entire body unpervaded by pure bright awareness. This is the fourth development of the five-factor noble right concentration. So you can see the bright awareness, the white cloth Buddha get, right? So the white has got, cloth has got this brightness. So like that. So the fourth jhana concentration, there is this, the brightness of the pure and the brightness of the mind. That's why it can see so many things. And furthermore, the monk has his theme of reflection well in hand, well attended to, well considered, well tuned by means of discernment. So this is the fifth one. So we got this four concentrations, first jhana, first, second, third, and fourth jhana concentration. And the fifth one is this reflection, pachavekka, pachavekka nimittam. So sukhaitam, that is that well in hand, he has taken it very well. And well attended to. How do we attend to the sign? If you are talking about 32 parts of the body, it's we attend by attention, maintaining the manasikara, you know, the attention to that one. So held by attention and well considered, that is rightly reflected upon, very well considered that this is this 32 parts of the body, this hair of the body, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, and so on. Very well analyzed, and one would see these bones as bones, you know, the in the body, and the wherever the bones are bones. So flesh is the flesh.
So but it's still in dhyana.
In dhyana, yes. So he is now having attained this dhyana. Now he is reflecting these things. He reflecting that very well reflected means that before the meditation, before attention to the meditation, for the first jhana concentration, he was reflecting on it. And having attained, he is maintaining this one and completely reflecting about it, not going anywhere else. Well tuned, that means rightly penetrated by insight. And that's also very important. So if you actually do Dhammanupassana, for example, about the teaching, if there was any part that is not clear, right? So it's not well penetrated, because that part is not clear. Even for the 32 parts of the body, there are certain parts you are not very familiar with. And therefore, you sort of skip and go with those things, right? So, whatever the meditation object, we should be very, you know, clever in that one. And thoroughly known, thoroughly penetrated. So, this part is so deep in that sense. And again, Netti Pakkarana explained this one. So, remember we talk about this fourth jhana concentration, going to the fourth jhana concentration. Having reached that fourth jhana concentration, fourth meditation, so he is, if you are very well attained to the fourth jhana concentration, you are in the boundary of the space is infinite and the material world. If you go beyond the material thing, then you do not see materiality, but you see the space as infinite. It's an amazing thing over there, this crossing of the boundary. If you are in the space is infinite, if you have the attention, then you go back to the fourth jhana concentration, because with the material thing. Unless you are very well fallen with that materiality thing, then you go down. But if you maintain the equanimity, you are in that level. It's like this is the step that you have a one step, you get into this next step, and then you come back to this step. You know, there's a skill doing this one, going up, down sort of thing, like a game. So, at that particular point of concentration, then he would need to reflect this Pachyavekka thing. Reflection has to be done in six ways. And what are these six things? He would need to think, my notion of the world is unaccompanied by non-covetousness. You know, the abhijja, that the, you know, the covetousness, that having seen something, one would say, let this be mine, right? So, at this particular point, she should get the idea, my notion of the world is accompanied by non-covetousness. No, he is not clinging to anything, he is not taking anything else in the world. So this concentration is now reviewed with this. And imagine that at that time in the concentration, that if you really see that, you know, there is no covetousness within me at that time, which is a great thing. Attaining is a different thing. Having attained to attain and then know that there is no covetousness at that time is really a good thing.
But at that time, your mind can change.
Well, if it change means that you are falling. But this is while it is maintaining that state, that you actually see, I'm in such a state like that, I get into this step, and I know I'm not fallen, but I can actually see around all the objects without getting down from this step. I can see that with the statue and all those things. If you are fallen, then that means you are not doing it rightly. That's the first one. Second one, my mind of all creatures is unaffected by ill will at that time. So, vyapada, abhyapada, me chitta. There's no ill will at that time. So, you actually look at whatever the objects, whatever the things, but you still see you don't have ill will. And then, aradha me viriyam, paggahita. My effort is instigated and exerted. My effort is there that, you know, that I originated that one before the meditation and it is there. And it is paggahitam is that you hold it thoroughly, exerted. That's the third one. And he see like that, having It's like that somebody, you know, having attained to a, let's say, one got a degree or something, and maintaining in that sense, because of my effort, I came over here and now I'm here, right? Let's say a poor person or someone who learned and then attained something, some degree or something, and having attained, that person is actually saying that I'm, because of my effort, I actually come over here and maintain it. And so that's the third one. The fourth one is, Pasado me kayo asarado. The my body is tranquilized and uninstigated. That is that not excited, untroubled. So tranquility is something like that, the tranquility of body and the tranquility of mental states. It's like that if you go underneath sun, and they say that's very powerful, and so you are sweating and all those things, and then you go underneath sort of a tree. So now you are not affected by the sun rays, right? So you see sort of cool sort of nature. Similarly, if someone is not affected by lust, malice, and the delusion, lobha dosa moha, then he's not burning from those things. Those three are the burning things. So there is this tranquility. Samahitam me chittam avikkitam. That is not scattered. That means my mind is concentrated and not scattered. So there is a concentration. And the fourth one is mindfulness is established and unmuddled. So at that particular time, one would think my mindfulness is established and unmuddled. So how it is unmuddled, you can see, up to the third jhana concentration, there is this possibility that the mindfulness is not thoroughly established. Remember that if there is a pleasure and the rapture, so one would not actually clearly mindful about this thing, because now he is not aware of the suffering because of the pleasure. So one would need to repeatedly apply this at that jhana state. Having attained this first, second, third, fourth concentration states, one would repeatedly apply these six. Imagine, what are these things? Samma, factors of enlightenment. You see that the passati, factor of enlightenment. Then the effort, virya, that's another one. And then the concentration, that's another one. So these factors are maintained, repeatedly maintained. And if he sees that these factors are no longer with me at that concentration level, then he need to do something to arrive at that one. Once arriving this stage, so you can see the value of seven factors of enlightenment, how it plays its path in this RN concentration. Bhujanga is very important. So just as if one person were to reflect on another, or standing person to reflect on a sitting person, or sitting person to reflect on a person lying down, even so monk, the monk has this theme of reflection well in hand. This is very well taken and very well learned and very well penetrated and well attended to, well pondered, well tuned by means of discernment. This is the fifth development of the five-factor noble right concentration. When a monk has developed and pursued the five-factor noble right concentration in this way, then whichever of the six higher knowledges, abhijna, he turns his mind to know and realize, seek and witness them for himself whenever there is an opening. That means whenever the range may be, he can do that in the respective sphere. Suppose that there are a water jar set on a stand, brimful of water, so that a crow could drink from it. If a strong man were to tip it in any way at all, would water spill out? Yes, Lord. In the same way, when a monk has developed and pursued the five-factor noble right concentration in this way, then when whichever of the six higher knowledges he turns his mind to know and realize, he can witness them for himself whenever there is an opening. So like that person actually, you know, shaking that water jar and water is spilling, like that, whatever the direction he wants, he can get that. Yes, Lord. In the same way, when a monk has developed this five-factor noble right concentration, he can get whatever knowledge he wants. Suppose there were a chariot on level ground at four crossroads, harnessed up to thoroughbreds, waiting with whips lying ready, so that a skilled driver, a trainer of a tameable horses, might mount and take in the reins with his left hand and the whip with the right, drive out and back to whatever place and by whichever road he liked. In the same way, when a monk has developed and pursued the five-factored noble right concentration in this way, then whichever of six high knowledges he returns his mind to know and realize, he can witness them for himself whenever there is an opening. So if a vehicle is there, and if I know how to drive, I can drive anywhere. If he wants, he wields manifold supernormal powers. Having been one, he becomes many. So one person becoming many, it can be thousand person. Having been many, he become one. So you might remember that there was this discourses where the one bhikkhu was maintaining the state, and somebody went to invite that monk to arms, and then it said that there are thousands of them. Chula, and then Buddha asked that person to go and touch one of those bodies, and then
then how it become 1,000 to 1?
Well, instantly, because of his psychic powers. To make a one, first you will make a one, and then you make another, and then his ability is developed. Having been one, then you become again, another one, back to the body. Remember the last time we discussed about this mind-made body? So you make one body, and then you are back to the same thing. Like that, you can make many if you are skilled, have the skill to do that, right? So, and coming back to that one is also another skill. It's not easy sometimes when you arrive at a certain concentration to come back. You don't feel like coming back. Sometimes you get a thought that I want to stop it, but no, I want to go forward further, like that. So these are very refined state. You can see those factors are maintained to very refined level, attaining the fourth jhana, and those reflection about the six reflections, I got this, the state. And having attained that, so to come back to that, also another skill that he got to develop. So that monk might have developed that if somebody touch one of those bodies, then, that I will come back to this state or something like that. And if one speak, all the other 1,000 bodies speak, like that. So, he appears, he vanishes. He goes that means he can become invisible. He goes unimpeded through walls, ramparts and mountains as it through space. So this is the person who developed the space kasina. The space is infinite meditation very well. Having maintained that space is infinite, that he got the skill very well. And then when he go to this in front of a physical object, he would think, let there be space. When he think, let there be space, there is space. So then he go through that. He dives and in out of earth as if it were water. So similarly, that this person has developed the element of cohesion, the liquid element, the meditation. So when you go to the nearby, if you are on earth, you can see that let there be this the water instead of this. So there it become like that, and it goes down.
It's only for that person's need, isn't it?
It's not his for the others. Not for others, yeah. But they can make it happen. For example, Buddha took by hand of that venerable Nanda and went to the divine world with him. So with the power, they can do it. And
isn't it that in that one that Buddha make him see that?
Well, Buddha, no, it says took him by hand.
says that took him by hand and went. It's not a big thing for a, with the psychic powers, you can see this earth can be shaken by the psychic powers. It's actually one of the reasons that these earthquakes are occurring. There are 8 reasons for earthquakes. One is that if a person who developed this kasina, a Brahman or someone, and if it's this, I can't exactly remember, if one of those, let's say he developed the element of motion, an element of cohesion, for example, and if these two are not balanced, then because of it is not balanced, earth will shake. And Venerable Moggallana said that one time he felt like turning this earth the other way around, because that there was this famine, there's no food at that time in that area. And then the other side was really rich, the food was there. And then he said that I feel like, rotating this earth. And when Buddha asked Venerable Moggallana, what are you going to do to the beings on this earth? From my right hand I will make another earth and I move them to that one and then rotate and then put them back. And Buddha said, let not be that thought for you, because beings will be affected by that one. They led to suffering, if it is changed like that. So it's that sort of power. It's the mind. If you can shake the earth and do that sort of thing, what about the taking someone to some other world? It's very simple. Buddha can from his body he can go to Brahma world, as far as Brahma world. He walks on water without sinking, as if it were dry land. Sitting cross-legged, he flies through the air like a winged bird. With his hand he touches and strokes even the sun and moon, so mighty and powerful. He exercises influence with his body even as far as the Brahma world. He can witness this for himself whenever the eye is opening, that is in the respect to fear. So someone might be thinking that if I touch the sun, then I will be get burned, right? So this is not talking about this physical body, it's the mind-made body. It can go anywhere, like the heat, water, it does not matter. Yeah. If he owns, he hears by means of divine ear elements, purified and surpassing the human, both kinds of sounds, divine and human, whether near or far. He can witness this for himself whenever the eyes are open. So he can see, hear these sounds of the divine beings and when they talk. If he wants, he knows the awareness of other beings, other individuals, having encompassed it with his own awareness. He discerns a mind with passion as a mind with passion, and a mind without passion as a mind without passion. He discerns mind with aversion as a mind with aversion, the mind without aversion as mind without aversion. He discerns the mind with delusion as a mind with delusion, a mind without delusion as a mind without delusion. He discerns restricted mind as restricted mind, and scattered mind as scattered mind. He discerns an enlarged mind as enlarged mind, and an unenlarged mind as unenlarged mind. He discerns excelled mind as an excelled mind, and unexcelled mind as unexcelled mind. Concentrated mind as concentrated mind, unconcentrated mind as unconcentrated mind. Is that familiar? This is the Chittanupassana. Remember that the in the mindfulness meditation, the Chittanupassana, where there's this see that saragamva chittan saragam chittan tipajana, the mind with the lustful mind as lustful mind, lust free mind as lust free mind, hatred mind as hatred mind, hate free mind as hate free mind, deluded mind as deluded mind, undeluded mind as undeluded mind, concentrated mind as concentrated mind, and so on. So that's the that meditation, the fourth Satipatthana. So now this person who has attained into this level, he can actually see this person's mind is now lustful mind and this lust free mind and so on. So each state can be seen and perceived from that. Buddha used to do that, even teaching Dhamma. If he wants, he recollects his manifold past lives. Ubbe nivasanusse. One birth, two birth, three birth, four, five, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100, 100, 1000, and so on. So it's not actually every birth. If he wants, he can do that one. But you can see, when you go to, if you are perceiving every birth, if you think about the time, because you are living infinitely, then the time will also, you know, there's a big factor. But you are sort of jumping, you know, you go for first, second, third, 20, 22, 4, something like that one, and then you go by tens, you know, hundreds and sort of thing, because you have seen the same samples everywhere, so you don't need to reach, if I'm human, this birth and the last birth and the last birth, would I want to keep on contemplating my human birth, or would I prefer to have about one in the divine world, or about one in the hell, or animal realm, and so on. So, this goes back to those one and many eons of cosmic contractions, many eons of cosmic expansion, many eons of cosmic contraction and expansion. So, Buddha can actually do that. And Arahants, well, Sariputta, for example, can recollect one eon, you know, that the Mahakappa, that goes back to this expansion contraction thing. And Buddha has no limit. There I had such a name, belonged to such a clan, and such an appearance. Such was my food, such my experience of pleasure and pain, such the end of my life, passing away from that state. I re-arose there. There too I had such a name, belonged to such a clan, had such an appearance. Such was my food, such was experience, passing away from that state. I re-arose here. Thus he remembered his manifold past lives in their modes and details. He can witness this for himself whenever there is an opening in the respective sphere. So that's this is the first knowledge Buddha got before the enlightenment. If he wants, he sees by means of the divine eye, that Dibba Chakku, Chakkuna Visuddhena, purified and surpassing the human, being passing away and reappearing. And he discerns how they are inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate, in accordance with their karma. These beings who were endowed with bad conduct of body, speech and mind, who reviled the noble ones, held wrong views, undertook actions under the influence of wrong views, with the breakup of the body after death, have reappeared in the plane of deprivation, the bad destination, the lower realms in hell. But these beings who were endowed with good conduct of body, speech and mind, who did not revile the noble ones, who held right views and undertook actions under the influence of right views, with the breakup of the body after death, have reappeared in the good destinations, in the heavenly world. So, you can see that Buddha mentioned that these views, because of the held right views and undertook actions, that's very important to have this right view. Because of Buddha said there are these four losses, loss of a king, and loss of wealth, loss of virtue, and the loss of view. And Buddha said, because of the loss of a king, or these material things, one would not go into hell. It is because of the loss of virtue and the view that one would go into these bad destinations. So, the view is very important, the right view to maintain. Whenever there is right view, the right result can be expected. Good destination can be expected. Thus, by means of divine eye, purified and surpassing the human, he sees being passing away and reappearing, and he discerns how they are inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate, in accordance with their karma. He can witness this for himself whenever the eyes are open. So, this Dibba Chakku is one who develop by perceiving light. If you perceive light, let's say you see light, and you grasp that one properly, and then you maintain that one in your mind, and you perceive that light all the time. The day by night, you do that. At the night, you perceive the light when it is sun shining, you can see that there is this sunlight, right? But normally what we would observe is not the light, but the object because of the sunlight. Here we are not talking about the object, we are talking about the sunlight. The light itself get into your mind and perceive. And it's one of the concentrations, very good concentration, that one can maintain, but you need to do it for a long time. And that will take out the, you know, the sleepiness that you will normally have, you know, drowsiness sort of thing, because that you perceive light, because of the light you don't sort of tend to sleep.
And vitakka vichara also disappears, isn't it?
Vitakka vichara will disappear if you, yes, you you are skilled in maintaining this one. And this technique, I mean, I have developed this one quite a lot for many, many years, this birth, and many million years in the past birth. And because of the light, you see things, right? And you remember. Why would I remember a book? If there was no light, this was so dark, then there would be any objects over here. But I do not know that there was such an object. So the light was creating this associative memory for me to actually, when I perceive that there was this light, light associate this thing. Every action, if you perceive, you can see. I mean, where are we staying in dark? Maybe on the sleeping time. All the other time, there is light and we perceive that one. So all those things can be remembered. So every mental action can be sort of analyzed in that way as well. Because you are aware, and such is my mental state. I see sort of a form and I get this feeling, and then I perceive that feeling, that pleasurable, and then get the volition. Because of the volition, I get this volitional formation, and therefore there is this consciousness. So those things, paticca samuppada, the dependent origination, can be seen from that one as well. So there is this, the fine level of the mind, there is this thing. So it's one of the concentrations one can do.
So I see the chair has light. I feel I see a chair, but if I turn my attention in one way, I can really see the light and not the chair, or the chair and the light.
You get the, your attention to the light, not to the chair. If you have the attention to the chair, that means you are actually thinking about these forms. You're contemplating about the form. The light meditation is not about the form. It's about the light. The perceiving that this thing and maintaining it. And it's when you develop it, you can see the object far away, in other words, from here. And it sort of happened to me sort of accidentally at the beginning. Because of the concentration, and I was actually thinking that I'm seeing some sort of a, you know, those places where the children are playing, that there's this the swinging thing, right? So I'm seeing in the concentration, I'm seeing this one, and I kept on seeing this time to time, and I was wondering where there is no swinging, you know, in my place, or not in my front of my thing, but there was one far away and I could see. And then I was started to see a bridge, and it's directly opposite of my thing. Beyond these houses, I could see sort of a bridge. And I could see thoroughly this, you know, the grasses and this, the soil around that one as well. But I was not focusing on that. As soon as I started focusing on that thing, then it vanishes at the beginning. And later on I got the ability, I can actually see. And then I could see the far away, very far away object beyond this world. Because I have developed for about 32 million years in my past births. That's what it is. So if someone has, you know, I mean, you don't have to have 32 million years. You could be skillful and develop in that one. And if you do that, one can do. So all the techniques are available to anyone who develop the fourth dhyana concentration. And then if you have this reflection about this, you know, five factor reflection, that I got my effort, you know, arisen, I'm mindful, I got the concentration, so you see these factors are there, so you reflect, time to time reflect, and then you can maintain the concentration. And as this discussed a little while ago, that since you are trying to analyze something, looking at something, and let's say that you saw something, and then the color of that chair or something, you know, take hold of your eye, then you are fallen from that concentration. Since you are fallen from that concentration, then you wouldn't go further. If you are not falling, then you can... So that's the fifth one. If he wants, then through the ending of the mental effluence, he remains in the effluent-free awareness, release and discernment release, having known and made them manifest for himself right in the here and now. He can witness this for himself whenever there is an opening. So this is the last one, Buddha God. That is asavakkhya. So how to distract these taints, all the taints. So that is mental effluence they were saying. They are the taints. So having done that, so one would attain the the arahant state. And so that was the discourse. It's a great discourse for someone who wants to develop the mind to a very refined level. So getting to the jhana concentration and those reflection. And that reflection is actually really valuable, even arriving at the concentration. But there the reflection is different. If you do not have the concentration, then one would actually reflect on the five hindrances. Do I have sensual desires holding my mind at this time? So if you reflect on that one, then you will either see it or you would see that it is not there. So if it is not there, then you become happy. Or else, is it ill will holding my mind? So these are the factors of enlightenment, bhujanga. The opposite of that one is these five hindrances. So you can reflect on the five hindrances. Do I have this ill will? Oh, is that my mind lethargic? It's sloth and torpor present in my mind or not? And so each time you see something like that, then you need to remediate and do something about to get rid of that one. You know, put effort and to get out of it. And similarly, is there restlessness, worry in my mind? Or is there doubt? So by analyzing those five factors, one can arrive at the concentration. So that's the technique for someone who is not getting the concentration. Someone who got the concentration, then reflect whether I do have these six factors.
Why does it say six factors for bhujanga?
Bhujanga has got seven factors.
Yeah,
at this time, you are actually analyzing in this the concentration, these six factors. Because that you can see, this is going little bit further. Little bit further in the sense that you actually see whether there is this abhijalu, that is this covetousness, right? So, and then the ill will, those two are not there. As soon as you reflect that these are not there, you can see I am in the path of aloba and ados. The hatred path is taken out, and in the lobe, the greedy path is taken out. And then what is left is the moha path, the delusion one. So you can see these other factors, the concentration and then the mindfulness, we move you on that direction. So some factors of bhujanga is there. I mean, even if you are reflecting on the seven factors of enlightenment with the concentration, fourth jhana concentration, for example, where would you end up? You are ending up with three vimukti, the three liberations. But here, Buddha is actually telling to achieve the psychic powers and know these things, and then you can destruct, having seen all these other things. Okay, so stop for today.